The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Friends, it's no surprise to see what's happening on our university campuses when it comes to hatred of the Jews.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be back live with you. After a week away in India, well, 4 days in India, 4 days travel either direction, got back on Saturday, and here we are on Monday. So glad to be back with you. 866-348-7884. If you'd like to join the discussion today, weigh in on what we're talking about. In particular, if you take issue with today's subject matter, phone lines are open. I will not be taking general Bible questions or general questions about Israel, etc. But the specific subject matter we're going to cover, we've got a lot to talk about. I do want to talk about the revelation of what's been happening on our college campuses, in particular the Ivy League campuses. I do want to talk about the ongoing charge that Israel is committing genocide. I want to share with you why I do have a heart of sympathy for the Palestinians in the midst of my standing with Israel, and tell you about something fascinating and painful that happened quite unexpectedly while I was in India. Again, number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. If you have not yet heard these clips, they went absolutely viral last week. I want to take a minute for you to hear them. This is Republican Representative Elsie Stefanik, and she is interviewing three of the heads of Ivy League schools. So six out of the eight Ivy League schools have female presidents. Now, if that's simply based on their extraordinary achievement, wonderful, more power to them. But it's highly unlikely that they would have that higher percentage and only two men, so three times the amount of women to men as university presidents at these elite universities, if not for DEI. Diversity, equality, inclusion standards. And I've read quite openly that in looking for candidates, they have to fit certain categories. So they may be highly qualified, but there may be others who are more qualified who don't fit those categories. So it ends up being reverse discrimination. In any case, it is striking that the ones testifying from Harvard, MIT, and Pitt, that they are, and Penn, excuse me, that they are all women. That's quite secondary. What's disturbing, but not surprising in the least, is what they had to say when questioned by Congresswoman Stefanik. Let's listen to the testimony.
Dr. Kornbluth, yes. At MIT, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate MIT's code of conduct or rules regarding bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
You've targeted at individuals, not making public statements.
Yes or no? Calling for the genocide of Jews does not constitute bullying and harassment?
I have not heard calling for the genocide for Jews on our campus.
But you've heard chants for intifada.
I've heard chants, which can be anti-Semitic depending on the context, when calling for the elimination of the Jewish people.
So those would not be according to the MIT's code of conduct or rules?
That would be investigated as harassment, if pervasive and severe.
Ms. McGill, at Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment, yes.
I am asking, specifically calling for the genocide of Jews, does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer yes, Ms. McGill. So is your testimony that you will not answer yes?
If it is if the speech becomes if the speech becomes conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
Conduct meaning committing the act of genocide? The speech is not harassment. This is unacceptable, Ms. McGill. I'm going to give you one more opportunity for the world to see your answer. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's code of conduct when it comes to bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be harassment.
The answer is yes. And Dr. Gay, at Harvard, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
What's the context?
Targeted as an individual. Targeted as at an individual.
It's targeted at Jewish students, Jewish individuals. Do you understand your testimony is dehumanizing them? Do you understand that dehumanization is part of antisemitism? I will ask you one more time. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric.
And is it anti-Semitic rhetoric?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric when it crosses into conduct that amounts to bullying, harassment, intimidation, that is actionable conduct, and we do take action.
So the answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard code of conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
Yeah. So far, the president of the University of Pennsylvania has resigned, along with one other notable official there. No resignations yet from the others. But Jewish CEO Bill Ackman, who'd given tens of millions of dollars to Harvard in the past, said if this had been the CEO of any of his companies and gave an answer like that, they would be fired within the hour. I mean, it's utterly remarkable to say it may be harassment if it turns into conduct. So it may be harassment if you start trying to slaughter people, trying to slaughter all the Jews on campus. That may be harassment. And you say, well, who's calling for the genocide of the Jews? How about from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free? That means no Israel. Get rid of the Jews, etc. And the other rhetoric that ties in with that. So, I don't want to belabor this just because I was away as this was happening live. I was following it, of course, from overseas, but I was away from it actually happening in real time to comment it on the air. So this has been played and overplayed. If you're just hearing it now, you've got to be like, what? What just, how could that be possible? Picture, it was about any other group. And you're calling for the elimination of black people or black people in a particular area. Or you're calling for the elimination of gay people or trans people or gay or trans people in a particular area. Or the elimination of women in a particular area. You just go down the list. Hispanics, any other group, you go down the list. You're calling for the eradication of Muslims in a particular area. And that's what you're chanting, and that's what you're calling for. Of course, everyone would say bullying, harassment. I'm not going to say the actual words, but let's just say it was with queers, right? And that's who's targeted, and they're chanting for the elimination of queers. Does that constitute bullying and harassment? These people would be out the door. They'd be expelled. They'd be canceled. Their academic careers would be destroyed. Their names would be published for daring to say such a thing, and it would be vile and ugly and wrong and despicable to say such a thing. But when it comes to Jews, you see, here's the issue. This campus anti-Semitism has been growing for many, many years. In the 2019 edition of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, I talked about an article from Washington Examiner Washington Times in 2018, talking about the rise of anti-Semitism on college campuses. In 2017, an article in Jerusalem Post talking about the lionizing of these various terrorist groups. In 2012, so we're going back 11 years now, I was invited to participate in a debate at the University of South Florida. A Messianic Jewish group invited me in. They were concerned at the rising tide of anti-Semitism on campus. And there were these various protests that were going to take place. They've been taking place on campuses across America, anti-Israel protests with very clear anti-Semitic overtones. In other words, not just fair, legitimate criticism of Israel, which Israel has its fair share of things to be criticized for, like other nations. No, not that, but outright elimination of Israel and outright anti-Semitic tropes and themes. And strong BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions drive in these protests as well. So they were concerned about the atmosphere on campus. I had been tracking it on other campuses for some years. We're talking about the demonization of Israel. We're talking about the demonization of Jewish people as a people. Not fair and valid criticism. Or even criticism that can be a little harsh. And we're talking about stuff that goes beyond that. So I was invited to do a debate there. They couldn't find anyone to debate me. So I did a talk, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? You can watch it on our website, AskDrBrown.org, or our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown. Or if you have our app, Ask Dr. Brown Ministries, just search for it there. Search for Evil Occupier. You can see the lecture I gave there. I insisted that if we did it, we had to have open mic Q&A afterwards. They were concerned about security issues. I remember an undercover cop coming up to me saying, "Hi, you may not know I'm a cop, but I'm right here in the audience in case there are any issues." I didn't think there would be any issues. There weren't, but they made the folks submit questions by hand. For some reason, I thought that was easier, better, but I got to interact with lots of questions. Then more importantly, hung out with some of the Palestinian Muslim students afterwards so we could talk face-to-face and interact, which had been my goal. This is 11 years ago. And this was rising on campuses, and it was rising on campuses in years before this. And what American Jews are waking up to, they've always been on guard about anti-Semitism from the right. They're now waking up to the pervasive anti-Semitism on the left, but it should have been obvious for years, because this is the direction the campuses have been going for years. And with so many of the views that come out of the Marxist ideology, that you have two classes of people. You have the oppressor and the oppressed, and the oppressors are basically white, straight American males, or just get rid of American white, straight males. They are the oppressors. Than any people of color, they are the oppressed. It's just these generalizations. The Europeans are the colonizers. The indigenous people are the colonized. Well, now you transfer that over to Israel. So many white Ashkenazi Jews, so they are obviously the oppressors, the colonizers, the Palestinians, a little darker skin, indigenous people, they are obviously the ones who have been colonized, the oppressed. So who do you stand with? Who's the evil one? Who's the terrible one? Obviously Israel. This is the way the ideologies have been going. There's no mystery. There's no mystery. It's just being exposed. So as ugly as it is, that's actually very good news.
Is brain health important to you or someone you love? Then please take a few moments and let me present a most amazing product formulated by leading physicians from Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins Medical. This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita. I watched my mother, who was wonderfully gifted and such a hard worker for most of her life until her later years. And then it was so sad to see the effects of neurodegeneration. Even to the stage, she did not recognize her son. Did you know that 2 out of 3 Americans aged 50 years or older experience some level of cognitive impairment affecting their lives? I was determined to find a formula that would support brain health. I commissioned 3 of the most talented and competent physicians to build a formula that would not only support mental health long-term, but would contribute to feeling brighter, more alert, and with less anxiety each day. After considerable research, a formula was developed, and now I have the joy of presenting NeuroShine exclusively from Trivita. The formula ingredients are equivalent to the science studies shown to improve focus and concentration, enhance mood, and memory acquisition. It has also been demonstrated to help prevent cognitive loss. I encourage you to call a Trivita Wellness consultant and discuss how NeuroShine will support your brain health or someone you love.
To feel better and brighter, try NeuroShine for yourself. Order today and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order proceeds from your first order will go to support the Line of Fire radio broadcast. Call 1-800-771-5584, 1-800-771-5584, or online at trivita.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
No joke. I wouldn't say this just to say it, but no joke. After just listening to the Trivita ad right after the show, I am ordering NeuroShine to check out for myself. Yeah, seriously. So do the same. 800-771-5584. 800-771-5584. You can ask questions about NeuroShine, other great products, Trivita products. They went with me on my trip to India. They're part of my jet lag recovery or overcoming. They're while they're coming back, etc. So check it out, 800-771-5584. It's a great way also to support the Line of Fire because 100% of your first order will be donated, all of it, to the Line of Fire and more than a tithe of all subsequent orders. You can also go to trivita.com, but use the code BROWN25 when you do. Okay, a little bit more about the universities. Before that, though, and then we're going to switch over to the subject of genocide, what happened on my trip to India, and also why I do have sympathy for the Palestinian people. We'll get to all of that. But before I get back to the universities, Senator Bernie Sanders, he's Jewish, very liberal Jew, and very against the current government in Israel, hostile to Prime Minister Netanyahu, hostile to the degree that has gone right wing, and I have real issues with the degree it's gone right within Israel. There's a good right and there's a bad right. This is bad right, and not all of it, but much of it. In any case, he's a constant critic of Israel on many fronts. This is really, really interesting to hear Senator Bernie Sanders say this is being interviewed on CNN. Let's listen.
So progressives like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib have been clear in calling for a ceasefire. You've taken some flack because you have not. The United States government is opposing a ceasefire as well. And they're isolated at the UN on that point. Why is it you oppose a ceasefire?
Well, first of all, I strongly support and wish and hope that the United States will support the United Nations resolution that was vetoed, that we vetoed the other day. That was a humanitarian pause, a humanitarian ceasefire that would, by the way, call for the release of all of the hostages held by Hamas and would have allowed the UN and other agencies to begin to supply the enormous amount of humanitarian aid that the Palestinian people. In terms of a permanent ceasefire, I don't know how you could have a permanent ceasefire with Hamas, who has said before October 7th and after October 7th that they want to destroy Israel. They want a permanent war. I don't know how you have a permanent ceasefire with an attitude like that.
Okay. So the war you're saying against Hamas is justified in that way.
I think Israel has the right to defend itself,
yes,
and to go after Hamas, not the Palestinian people.
Okay.
All right. So how do you have a ceasefire with someone who says we're going to do October 7th over and over and over and over? Senior leadership in Hamas have said that since October 7th. We're going to do it over and over and over until Israel is destroyed. By the way, that was not CNN. That was Face the Nation. It was CNN's Fareed Zakariyah who said that the American universities are no longer seen as bastions of excellence, but as partisan outfits. I want to skip down to a tweet that was posted. Let's see who posted it. It was the, just didn't come up here on my screen properly for some reason. It is the End Wokeness on X. So End Wokeness on what used to be Twitter. YouTube survey. Top groups that believe the Holocaust didn't happen. Democrats, 10% versus 5% of Republicans. Black people, 13% versus 5% white people. City residents, 14% versus 3% rural people. Young people, look at this, 20%. 20% of young people surveyed said the Holocaust didn't happen, compared to 0% of those over 65. Quite extraordinary. And in each case, you have groups that are primarily, in terms of voting blocks and things like that, leaning left. All right? You can't make generalizations about every person or every group involved there. Obviously, you'd say, well, black people or women, just make generalizations, obviously. But these numbers are quite striking. The most striking being that one out of five young people surveyed said they thought the Holocaust was a myth. Well, obviously, this is social media bombardment, but there's the mentality in many of the universities as well. Now, just so you see the influence, the prestige of these, let me read this to you. Ivy League is a group of eight private research universities in the northeastern United States. They are Brown University, Columbia University, Cornell University, Dartmouth College, Harvard University, Princeton University, University of Pennsylvania, and Yale University. These schools are known for their academic excellence, selectivity in admissions, and social elitism. All eight universities place in the top 18 of the 2024 U.S. News and World Report National Universities ranking, including five Ivies in the top 10. Number one in the USA survey, Princeton. Number three, Harvard. Yale, number five. University of Penn, number six. Brown University tied for 9. And you heard testimonies from Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, and MIT, where the presidents could not simply say that calling for the genocide of the Jews in and of itself is bullying and harassment. Absolutely mind-boggling. Alan Dershowitz, the famous attorney, has this to say: fire Harvard's Claudine Gay from my old college now, and then dismantle, discredit, and utterly destroy the Orwellian DEI groupthink that put her there. In other words, she may be accomplished, an accomplished academic in many ways, and a real achiever in many ways, the daughter of Haitian immigrants. She may be exceptional in many ways, but does she rise to the level of being president at Harvard? Many would say, and insiders have said forthrightly, well, there was a pool they had to work with, and that was influenced by DEI. So you have to fit certain categories, and then you're going to have more weight put on that. In any case, let's just say, as nothing to do with DEI, let's just say that she and all the other women are there exclusively based on their achievements, that they were the best people, looking at everybody, looking at straight white males, looking at everybody, that they were the best for the job. This has still brought to the surface the rot, the moral rot, the intellectual rot, the educational rot that has infested these universities. There was a major study released just last month before possibly, and it was a survey of free speech on major schools in America. The school that ranked the worst, and President Gay was presented with this as well. But you say, oh, Gay, that's her name. Forget the name. She's a married woman to a man. Okay, forget that. Then the name's not the issue. Okay, please don't go there. All right. President Gay was confronted with this, and she didn't accept the findings. But according to this major survey, respected survey, the school that was the worst in the nation for free speech In other words, that students could speak freely without consequence, without fear of what would happen to them. The school that was the worst was Harvard. And there are factors that you're scored by. Harvard achieved a score of zero. And it would have, if it registered minus, achieved a score of something like minus 11. This is the atmosphere there of stifling of free speech. This is where the whole tolerance movement has been. Tolerance means we are intolerant of any views other than our own. Diversity means my way or the highway. Inclusion means that we reject everybody who doesn't fit in our group. We include our group and exclude everybody else. That is inclusion. That's why Dershowitz calls it Orwellian. That's why we've talked about the Orwellian doublespeak in the radical left for many, many years. Bad news, so many Jews uncomfortable fearing even for their safety on campus. That's bad. The good news is we've known it was there. It's just coming to light for everybody to see. We'll be right back. Michael Brown here, friends, with a very, very sober announcement. We're living in different days. We're living in different times. The battle has come to us, and like it or not, every single one of us, we are in the line of fire today. And friends, there is an all-out war today against the Jewish people. There is an all-out war like there was before the Holocaust to annihilate and destroy Jewish people. And God has positioned us with the line of fire on the front lines to do two things that are very, very critical. One, to speak the truth about Israel, to speak the truth about anti-Semitism, to push back against the destructive lies, to push back against false theologies, to stand strong and tall and say, this is what the word says, and this is what reality is. And then with that, friends, we also reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. It is a key role that we play. We are equipping Jewish evangelists around the world. We are equipping the church to share the good news. We are directly involved in winning Jewish people to Jesus, Yeshua. So we are fighting on these two critically important fronts in unique ways. And I want to call on each of you to stand with me. Stand with our support team. Become a torchbearer today. These are urgent days, and you can make a difference. Go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate Monthly Support. $1 a day or more, you become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter. Together we're making a difference. We will pour into you. Immediately get two free books that will bless you. You get access to many free online classes, exclusive video content, all other benefits. Read about it at AskDrBrown.org. Join our support team today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. You know, I remember being at Yale University to deliver a lecture well over 30 years ago. And I was kind of shocked by the atmosphere there. I was shocked by how far left things had gone. I was a child of the 60s, born in 1955, grew up in the 60s, got caught up in the whole counterculture revolution, as you know my story, became a heavy drug user, started getting high at 14, shooting heroin at 15, radically born again at 16 in 1971. In fact, we're about to come on the 52nd anniversary of the night where God wonderfully delivered me from drugs and radically changed my life, December 17th. So I grew up in that time, so the radical cultural shift was part of it, bought into it before the Lord turned my heart. I was still shocked to see, less than 20 years later, the atmosphere on the campuses and how far things had shifted. Just walking around, just seeing the posters and the billboards and interacting with people, and it was quite striking. Not about Israel or Jewish issues then, but just in terms of moral values and things that were being espoused. And it was shocking back then. So it's not that much of a surprise to see those who were trained in the universities, those who took these things in, where they've gone, where things have ended up, where we are today. So before I tell you about what happened in India, I want to play this clip. This is Orthodox Jewish author, former attorney, real estate developer, Uri Kaufman, talking about what's happening in the war, Israel's war with Hamas, and how one group is getting their information from one place and another from another, and the bias that comes out of it. Listen to what he has to say.
It was there, but back in those days, I went to NYU in the 1980s. We used to call it 60s envy. It was thought to be like this passing kind of thing, and it was all, of course, it's all grounded in racism and things like that. And the fact that much of what you're seeing, it's all cognitive dissonance. It's this idea that there are a lot of people who sadly have divided the world into two groups. There's the oppressors and the oppressed. And the oppressors are the white people, and the oppressed are the people of color. And here you have this high-profile conflict, Israel and the Palestinians. And it's fought not just against white people, but against Jews, who in the minds of many progressives are a group of privilege. And one of my professors back at NYU Law School referred to Jews as a group of privilege. He was Jewish himself, I should say. So you got the white group of privilege in one corner and the people of color in the other. They are going to side with the people of color. The problem is the facts don't even remotely justify it. So they change the facts to fit the narrative. That's what cognitive dissonance is. That is why. Before the October 7 war, if you open the New York Times, it said Gaza was under Israeli military occupation.
And how could they under say, Hamas control?
It's
for
ridiculous.
Close to two decades.
For 20 years, they talked about the draconian blockade of Gaza. Let me give you the statistics. In 2022, Israel supplied Gaza with 5.7 billion gallons of water, 67,000 trucks filled with supplies, food, clothing, you name it, baby formula. Israel supplied Gaza with 2/3 of its electricity. Fuel for the other third. There's a small power plant there. Now, they got to pay for this. So 18,500 Gazan Palestinians had licenses to work in Israel. You have the only war in the history of the world, literally, in which one side is supplying the other purely because on humanitarian grounds, because Israel really is a light on two nations. So the New York Times called this a draconian blockade. They said it on two occasions. Every story they did reflects this. Again, it's cognitive dissonance. They've got this mindset, the people of color have to be the good guys, the white guys have to be the bad guys, so you change the facts to fit the narrative.
And of course, in that narrative, the people of Israel are all white guys, so that's another myth on top of it. We're neglecting the people of color and the people of Israel, historically and to this day. So that's another myth to be dismantled that Uri Kaufman didn't even touch on. He was talking about initially the atmosphere on the campuses and what it's become. There is more that he talked about in terms of what's actually happened with casualties. We may come back to that later. But let me share an incident with you that happened while I was in India. I was visiting dear friends, colleagues of mine in India. I've been there many, many times. And while there, a professor at a major university in India invited me to participate in a forum. When I was there previous year, I did a lecture on morality and modernity at a school there in India. Now this is a prestigious university. I was asked to participate in a forum. It was going to be with international students, a massive, massive student body they have there. And out of it, they have a number of foreign students, about 700 students from 56 nations. And they were talking about equality and how equality is embedded in the Indian Constitution. So this is what the discussion was on. And I was invited to come in just the day before when it was realized I was there. Hey, why don't you come in, participate in that? So I was delighted to do it and came into the room as soon as we could get there. The forum was already going on. I don't know, 30, 40 students that were there. And they were from all over, from Afghanistan, from different parts of Africa, from Syria, a couple very, very clearly Palestine, Gaza, as they introduced themselves. And different ones were getting up and talking about equality and talking about issues they had and what was fair and not fair before I spoke. And then a young man got up there wearing a cap, looking angry, and he said, "I'm from Palestine, Gaza." And he began to talk about, with all the talk of equality there in India and at the university, that he has not heard the support that he would want to hear for his people. And they clapped for him with each point that he made. He spoke about Israel's occupation. He spoke about tragic things. I believe his own father and brother, he said, were killed by Israeli forces in the past. So it's terrible, absolutely tragic to hear that, horrific to hear that. I can't imagine. And went on from there. And very clearly, speaking critically of America, America's support of Israel, obviously of Israel itself, Israel obviously in his mind guilty of genocide. We found out afterwards, another student there from Gaza, the one from Syria, the other student there from Gaza said that just in the current war now, he lost his mother and father, I believe. So when I gave my talk, I talked about the concept of equality embedded in the American Constitution, the Declaration of Independence specifically, that, you know, we hold these truths that all men are endowed with certain inalienable rights by the Creator, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I asked, in what sense, though, can we say all men are created equal? Obviously, we're not. Some are born into wealthy families, some into poor families. Some are physically strong, some are physically weak, some are mentally strong, some are mentally weak. In what way are they created equal? So I got into that, and then I said, well, how could we say that and then have slavery at the same time? And then how that was justified wrongly, but then how ultimately our system of equality prevailed. And then I explained how each religion, because I was not there to preach, that each religion can have different perspectives and revolutionary thoughts. And here are some revolutionary thoughts within Christianity that helped lead to liberation of peoples through the centuries. So that was my talk. But then I just felt, for integrity's sake, I needed to say that I'm a Jewish American. And one of the things I said needs to happen is that you need to have uncomfortable conversations. You need to sit with people that you really differ with and say, look, I'm sure I have blind spots, and I want to hear your perspective. Now, you may end up hearing the perspective and being even more convinced of your perspective than you were at the start. But I said, in particular, I want to have a private conversation with the gentleman from Gaza who've lost family members and the gentleman from Syria. I want to speak with you in particular because it's important I hear your perspective. I said that from the heart, but I also wanted them to know not just I was an American and a follower of Jesus, but that I'm Jewish. I felt that was important in light of comments they had made. So when it ended, the professors that coordinated said, okay, we have some time for Q&A, interaction with Dr. Brown. So the student from Afghanistan went on at some length indicting America pretty much from World War II until today. And how could I justify that? Who did America think it was? So I gently explained that even within America, there's great debate over the invasion of Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan. And I said, please understand our perspective in terms of the attack on our own soil. I said, it took the life of my wife's brother. So these are personal issues to us as well. I said, when the Taliban would not give up Al-Qaeda, they were there, hiding there, and America said, give them up. Our battle's not with you. Well, once they're going to hide the ones that slaughtered our people, you become our enemy. I said, but then even there, we tried to set up democracy and et cetera. In any case, I said, fair criticisms, let me explain. Then the students from Gaza said, they want to hear what I have to say and about Israel and killing their own family. And I said, I don't have the moral right to address you. I don't. Because I'm a stranger to you and you've lost family. I don't have the moral right. Who am I to address your suffering? They said, no, we want to hear. We want to hear your perspective. We want to interact with it. So I said, oh, okay, but forgive me because I am going to say things that offend you. I did reiterate that I've said many times on the radio, you've heard me, that Palestinian blood is just as precious in God's sight as Israeli blood, that the death of a Palestinian baby is just as precious in God's sight as the death of an Israeli baby. You've heard me say that over and over and over again from the heart. I did say, all right, let's start with what Hamas did on October 7th. Well, in their mind, Hamas did not rape anyone. That's myth. Hamas did not kill any babies. That's myth. When I talked about Israel doing its best to minimize civilian casualties, and Hamas, for example, operating out underneath Al-Shifa Hospital and even having armaments within the hospital, they absolutely dismissed that. That is complete myth. In their minds, that is complete myth. Those are images that somebody put up on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So this is what they believe. I kept saying, look, you are not Hamas. Hamas is not Islam in terms of doing what it did. And those are not your values. But no, in their mind, Hamas was not that bad. And the one that was guilty of genocide was Israel. I said, well, what, you want the destruction of Israel. You don't want a two-state solution. They denied that. I said, you say from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. What happens to the Jews? That's the eradication of the Jews. So it got very intense. We had to shut it down. I went up to one of the men afterwards to shake his hand. He goes, I will not shake your hand because the blood of my family is on your hands. That's what he said. That's how he felt. Then I went to the other gentleman, and he said to me, your rockets killed my family. I said, well, your government killed mine. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, your government is Hamas, and they killed my Jewish family in Israel. And just to understand, there's suffering on all sides. That being said, I have real sympathy for the Palestinians. They grew up hearing propaganda day and night. They don't believe Hamas is that bad. They see their own family die at the hands of the IDF. What are they going to think? I've got great sympathy for the Palestinians as well. We come back, we'll address head-on the question, is Israel committing genocide?
Are you or a cherished loved one finding it harder to remember names, stay focused, or maintain a positive outlook on life? Well, you're not alone. I'm Dr. Paul, and I have a critical health alert. Did you know that approximately 2 out of 3 Americans age 50 and older experience some level of cognitive impairment affecting their daily lives? It's a serious issue, but there's hope. Introducing Trivita's NeuroShine, brain support supplement developed by Mayo and Johns Hopkins trained doctors. NeuroShine is specifically designed to nurture the healthy development of brain cells and provide defense against neurodegeneration. Trivita's NeuroShine contains Bacopa Mineri, shown to enhance verbal learning, delayed word recall, memory acquisition, and reduction of anxiety. Studies also show an impressive 85% improvement in focus and concentration. Our clinical formulators included lithium orotate, a specific salt known to enhance mood, making you feel better and brighter. It also demonstrated to prevent cognitive loss. Trivita's formula includes pantothenic acid, playing a crucial role in regulating and synthesizing several neural pathways, ensuring comprehensive support of your cognitive health. Protect and enhance your cognitive health today with NeuroShine. Experience the difference in mood, memory, focus, and concentration. Trivita, your trusted partner in wellness, brings you NeuroShine to support a brighter and healthier mind. Sold only by Trivita.
To feel better and brighter, try NeuroShine for yourself. Order today and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order proceeds from your first order will go to support the Line of Fire radio broadcast. Call 1-800-771-5584, 1-800-771-5584, or online at trivita.com.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let's ask the question. Let's lay it out. Is Israel committing genocide against the Palestinians. This is a charge that you'll hear over and over and over. It's just on everybody's lips. It was on the lips of the student from Gaza that I interacted with in India. It is on the lips of young people, old people, social media, mainstream media. Genocide, 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 genocide. I recently received a note from one of our ministry school grads. She was talking to her 15-year-old daughter, remember, raised in a godly Christian home, talking to her 15-year-old daughter. They were going to stop at McDonald's for something. And the daughter said, no, we can't go there. They support Israel. And the mother was surprised by the comment and said to her, okay, tell me what Israel is doing wrong, but don't say the word genocide. The daughter said, but they are committing genocide. So let's first think about what the word genocide means. I've got a new article where I get into the data if you want to look at it. It's entitled, "It is downright scandalous to accuse Israel of genocide." It is downright scandalous to accuse Israel of genocide. So first, the actual definition, and it's the second paragraph of the article. It is the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group of people because of their ethnicity, nationality, religion, or race. So worst genocide in history, the Holocaust, with Hitler trying to wipe out all European Jews. They actually were gathering things for a Jewish museum to preserve the memory of the people they wiped out, because there were going to be no people left. That was the goal. And they almost succeeded. They wiped out 2 out of every 3 European Jews. When it comes to Poland, they wiped out 3 million out of 3.3 million. That's more than 9 out of every 10. These numbers are absolutely mind-boggling. Whole communities were just wiped out overnight. Just disappeared, gone, went up in smoke, literally. Went up in smoke overnight. This is what happened. Pol Pot, another of the worst genocides in history, the leader of Cambodia, that he wipes out as much as 25% of his people. Certain ones considered not fit to live. Tortured, the killing fields, just another horrific story. There are other Holocausts or genocides, I should say, of massive proportion in world history, in recent world history, the Holocaust being at the top of the list. So is Israel committing genocide against the Palestinians? Now, please hear me. This does not minimize Palestinian suffering. This does not minimize the pain of a loss of a mother or father or a son or a daughter or a grandchild or grandparent. This is not, statistics don't minimize losses. And I'm not minimizing the sufferings of the people for a split second, not at all. And in point of fact, because my historic sympathies are more with Israel, and I would certainly have pro-Israel biases, I regularly read anti-Israel material. I read material attacking Jewish policies and criticizing Israel's war effort and things like that. And they're easy enough to find. So because I understand where my biases are and my leanings are, I'm constantly reading things on the other side. So, and there are critics within Israel say, look, we want our freedom, but we don't want freedom if we lose our soul and we can't keep killing Palestinian innocent civilians. And others would say Israel's doing an amazing job of preserving life. As always, Israel's doing its best to prevent civilian casualties. But let's just say that it's failing badly. Let's just say that its response is disproportionate. In other words, within a war, it's understood that you may have the enemy hiding in a certain enclave, and the only way to kill that enemy, you're going to kill certain civilians. Well, let's say you had 10 of the worst killers of the enemy in one area holding 5 civilians hostage, and you had the opportunity to take them out. In war, you might take them out, even though the other 5 died. That would be considered collateral damage. But if the 10 were in a building, an apartment building that had, say, 5,000 people, and you kill all 5,000 to kill the 10, that would be considered disproportionate. So even if you said that Israel's response has been disproportionate, even if that was your view, to call it genocide. Let's go through some of the facts, some of the specifics, some of the details. Again, this is not to minimize the suffering of the Palestinian people. And it's not to say Israel can't do even better. It's simply to just ask questions. So Hamas releases the stats on people dying. And they don't distinguish, clearly, combatants from civilians. Others try to make those distinctions, but they'll give total numbers. So this is Hamas giving the numbers. But let's take the numbers at face value. When I wrote the article coming back from India, I guess that was Saturday, the stats were 17,000 killed. Let's say none of them were Hamas combatants. Let's say all of them were civilians, which is certainly not the case. Let's say they're all civilians, women, children, which is not the case, but let's just say it was. All right, this is the alleged Holocaust. So hang on. The 2.1 million people living in Gaza. 2.1 million. So 10% would be 210,000. That would be 10%. Now remember, the wiping out of European Jews, that was two-thirds. That was 67%. Pol Pot's genocide, that was 25%. If it was 210,000, that would be 10% of the population. If it was 1%, and nobody in their right mind is going to call an attack that takes out 1% of the population genocide. Nobody in their right mind, unless it's attacking the Jews, in which case you don't have to be in your right mind. Just buy into the anti-Semitic tropes and libels and go ahead and repeat them. But this is less than 1%. Even if we took all Hamas's figures at face value, some have said, wait, Hamas includes just people who die of natural causes, which is going to be 2,000-3,000 a month with a population that size. And again, it doesn't tell you how many were actually combatants. And their numbers historically have been inflated. But even if they're all accurate, that's less than 1%. Now, it's tragic. The losses are tragic, especially civilian casualties. And the upheaval and the refugee status now within their own country because they're having to flee and move south, now move further, first move south, now move out of Khan Yunis and move closer to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt. And where do we go? And humanitarian, very difficult situation, terrible suffering. Also, Palestinians, by the way, more and more rising up against Hamas. Say, you're getting all the supplies. You're living underground in your tunnels. You're safe. We're dying here. We're not just blaming the Jews. We're blaming you also. So that's happening as well. I don't know how widely, but I'm reading more and more anecdotal reports about it. But here, bottom line, even at the worst possible figures that you could use, you're still dealing with less than 1%. And Israel has the capability with bombing of killing everybody. If there was an attempt to genocide the Palestinians to wipe them out, Israel could actually do it to the Palestinians in Gaza. Instead, to have less than 1% killed. This is mind-boggling that people are calling this genocide. Mind-boggling. Now, let's go further. 1947, 1948, Israel becomes state. Partition plan 1947, rejected by the surrounding nations which attack Israel. 1948, Israel declares its independence. The war intensifies. 200,000 Arabs, who would now be called Palestinians today, remain within Israel. Remember, Israel is guilty of genocide of Palestinians. 200,000 Palestinians remain within Israel. They are now more than 2 million today. They have grown since 1948 to today by more than 1,000%. This is genocide? When a group grows by more than 1,000%? Are you kidding me? You said, no. We're not talking about the Arabs, the Palestinians within Israel. We're talking about the West Bank and Gaza. Okay. So Israel takes over the West Bank after the Six-Day War. And you have a little under 600,000. Figures I looked at estimate 585,000 Arabs who then became identified as Palestinians living in the West Bank in 1967. So Israel takes over in 1967, occupies the West Bank, and then has had rulership over Palestinian Authority or working with Palestinian Authority. So what about the genocide of the Palestinians there? Those numbers have grown The Palestinian population of the West Bank has grown from 585,000 to 2.5 million. Grown by more than 400%. Grown by more than 400%. Gaza, Israel pulls out unilaterally, removes their 8,000 or so people that have been living there for years, pulls out everything, leaves the vineyards, leads all the agricultural development, technological development to the Palestinian leadership and the people. Sadly, they trash and use it for their own purposes. But what happens now? 2005, Israel pulls out. 2006, Hamas is elected. But what's happened from 2005? The alleged genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. The population has grown since 2005 from roughly 1.3 million to 2.1 million. So it's grown by 60%. Grown by 60%. So grown by more than 1,000% within Israel proper. Grown by more than 400% in the West Bank. So Israel proper grown by over 1,000% since 1948. West Bank grown by over 400%, the Palestinian population since 1967. Gaza, grown by over 60% since 2005. You have explosive rates of growth, higher, way higher, dramatically higher than almost all other parts of the world. And this is genocide? This is Israel committing genocide? Are you kidding me?
Another program powered by the Truth Network.